everyone. I'm Lenore Mudu and welcome to Health Chat. Over the years, major advances have been made in almost every area of the response to HIV/AIDS. However, leaders in the global response to end the AIDS epidemic say progress for adolescents is falling behind. UNAIDS say AIDS has become the leading cause of death for adolescents in Africa and the second leading cause of death among adolescents globally. Just one in four children and adolescents under the age of 15 have access to life-saving antiretroviral treatment. On today's program, we will discuss youth and HIV/AIDS and put an emphasis on those who have been infected at birth and are transitioning to adolescence and adulthood. Joining us for more on the subject, our guest will be Dr. Stephen Lee. Dr. Lee is Vice President of Program Implementation and Country Management with the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation, EGPAF. And Dr. Lee, welcome to the program. And we don't have Dr. Lee yet, but he will join us in a few seconds. And we will start discussing the issue of teen and HIV with Dr. Lee in a moment. But first, VOA's reporter Jody Kapwa has this report on addressing pediatric AIDS and the work of EGPAF.
The Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation says progress is being made in preventing new infections in children. It says there's been a 24% reduction in new infections since 2009. Much of that is due to providing antiretrovirals to more HIV-positive pregnant women. Nevertheless, there's much more to be done. Mary Pat Kiefer is the foundation's senior director for technical leadership.
We still have way too many children being infected, and just in sub-Saharan Africa last year, there were 300,000 kids with new infections. That's way too many. So we have the new infections, and we're having problems in identifying those kids and getting them on treatment early enough.
It's estimated that globally, only 28% of children needing HIV treatment received it in 2011. Kiefer says part of the problem lies in many African healthcare systems, which are not able to link children of HIV-positive women to the right services.
I would say overall that we're able to identify maybe 50% of those HIV-exposed kids and test them. Very often, the mothers will bring their kids for services at different place than where the mother received her services during pregnancy. And we still then have problems with the quality of services in some of the facilities and making sure that we have everything in place and can provide the services to the kids.
Treating a child with HIV is not simply a matter of providing a lower dose of adult medication. It must be specially formulated for a child's body.
The situation with pediatric drugs is better, but we still don't have enough drugs for children. And we don't have drugs that are easy to administer. We have syrups, which are heavy and messy, and they taste terrible. I know that some of the drug companies are looking at sprinkles, at different ways of delivering the drugs, but it still is a big problem. For older children, we can give them the child doses of the three drugs in a tablet form, and that's much easier. The infants, it's still a big problem.
She says as the number of infected infants goes down, the pharmaceutical companies have less incentive to develop new drugs for children. That's because developing the drugs is expensive and the return on investment may be small.
There is still a lot of pressure being put on the pharmaceutical companies because we need better drugs, we need to test more drugs in children, and we definitely need new ways to administer the drug so that it's palatable and easy for the caregivers to give to the children.
The Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation focuses much of its work on preventing pediatric AIDS in the first place. That starts with treating HIV-positive pregnant women. Kiefer says the top-of-the-line treatment is now a three-drug regimen, but a two-drug regimen is still widely used.
What is going away is the use of just what was called single-dose nevirapine, so just the drug that you give the mother and the baby at delivery. And the drugs that we have now are covering the women earlier in pregnancy and all the way through the breastfeeding period. We can address all the range of transmission that occurs for the children.
But Kiefer says drugs alone won't solve the problem. She says more attention must be paid to maternal and child health and improving health care systems. Since 2009, six African countries have led the way in reducing new infections among infants by more than 40%. Namibia was at the top of the list with a 60% reduction. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
We'll have our discussion on adolescent and HIV/AIDS, but with Dr. Stephen Lee, Vice President of Program Implementation and Country Management with the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation, ECPAF, in a moment. But first, a quick roundup of the latest health news. The World Health Organization has started administering a quicker and efficient alternative for Ebola testing called a rapid test kit, RTK. Test results take 15 minutes. RTK was created by the U.S.-based Cogenix Medical Corporation and is being used for the first time in Ebola-affected countries in West Africa. The test will be available soon to outside agencies and organizations. In another Ebola news, the medical charity Alliance for International Medical Action, ALIMA, says a Japanese anti-Ebola drug being tested in Guinea has shown some positive result. The charity, which ran the trials of favipiravir in Guinea, says mortality rates fell from 30 to 15% in patients with a low to moderate Ebola count, but was not effective on those with a high level of the virus. It says the anti-Ebola drug should be made available across West Africa. And finally, the World Health Organization has announced that smart syringes that break after one use should be used for injections by the year 2020. Normal syringes can be used again and again, but smart ones prevent the plunger being pulled back after an injection or retract the needle so it cannot be used again. Health experts say reusing syringes leads to more than 2 million people being infected with diseases, including HIV and hepatitis, each year. The new needles are more expensive, but the WHO says the switch will be cheaper than treating the disease. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news. Now we're going to take a short break, and when we will return, we will discuss HIV among teenagers and adolescents with our guest, Dr. Stephen Lee, Vice President of Program Implementation and Country Management with the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation. And we are trying to reach on Dr. Lee. We'll be back in a second.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
VOA Africa Health Network, a multimedia network reaching 50 million Africans weekly. We bring you relevant, reliable health news and information. We ask you about the health problems most important to you and inform you about health problems impacting your community. VOA Africa Health Network. Visit our website at www.africahealthnetwork.com.
Welcome back to Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou, and today we will be discussing HIV among teenagers. Our guest is Dr. Stephen Lee. He's Vice President of Program Implementation and Country Management with the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation. Dr. Lee, are you there? Hello, Dr. Lee? Okay, I think we're still having trouble reaching Dr. Lee. We should have him in a few moments. Dr. Lee is there, is ready to talk to us, and he is presently in Nairobi, Kenya. So we're having a little bit of trouble with our phone lines, but this should be resolved in a minute. And we'll take another break and come back with Dr. Stephen Lee.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Partey, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports.
My name is Edward Ameyibo. I listen to Daybreak Africa to be abreast with developments on the continent. I encourage you to do the same.
You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is the Voice of America, Sonny Young. Please join me Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC for the Sunny Side of Sports. On Fridays, you can also hear my expanded 30-minute show at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. And again, our topic today is youth and HIV/AIDS. Our guest is Dr. Stephen Lee, Vice President of Program Implementation and Country Management with the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation. And Dr. Lee will be joining us from Nairobi, Kenya. Let's see if we have Dr. Lee with us. We don't have Dr. Lee with us. Let's go back to the statistic. Over the years, major advances have been made in almost every area of the response to HIV/AIDS. And there have been some progress in preventing mother-to-child transmission and other progress in terms of lowering the rate of HIV/AIDS among drug users, men having sex with men, and other populations, so-called vulnerable population. However, leaders in the global response to end the AIDS epidemic say progress for adolescents is falling behind. The United Nations AIDS organization, UNAIDS, says AIDS has become the leading cause of death for adolescents in Africa and the second leading cause of death among adolescents globally. And just one in four children and adolescents under the age of 15 have access to life-saving antiretroviral treatment. And as we know that ARTs or ARVs are very, very critical in maintaining the health of those who are affected and infected by HIV/AIDS, it is very, very important to ensure that everyone, including adolescents of 15 and under, have access to antiretroviral treatment. And on today's program, we will discuss this issue of youth and HIV/AIDS, and with an emphasis on those who have been infected at birth and are transitioning to adolescence and adulthood. Observers say that this issue has not received much emphasis. So we will talk about teenagers who have been infected when they were babies and are now making the transition to adolescence and adulthood. Now we have our guest. He's Dr. Stephen Lee, Vice President of Program Implementation and Country Management with the Elizabeth Glaser Pediatric AIDS Foundation. Dr. Lee is joining us from Nairobi, Kenya. Dr. Lee, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
It's good to have you. We had a little trouble there getting you, Dr. Lee, and we are very, very happy to hear your voice, I have to say.
Apologies. I was on the line, but it the line went dead.
Things happen. We understand it's a long distance. We are in Kenya, and long distance calls sometimes, you know, are unpredictable. So welcome again to the show. Now, we had a report earlier about the issue of pediatric AIDS. This was a general look at pediatric AIDS, some of the progress that have been made over the years, but the remaining challenges, and the report was also highlighting the work of EGPAF in Africa, in one of the African countries. Now, we want to get from you an assessment as to where we are in the fight against pediatric AIDS.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I thank you again for having me. So not having heard the previous piece, what I can say is that, first of all, Elizabeth Glazer Pediatric AIDS Foundation has been engaged in prevention, care, and treatment services for mothers, children, and families for many years, over 20, 25 years. And we're in 14 countries with over 7,000 sites. Where we are today is, you know, we know how to prevent transmission of HIV to babies. We have the medications, we have the knowledge and experience in preventing mother-to-child transmission of HIV, and this is usually through anti-HIV treatment medications. We also know that how to identify kids who have been exposed to HIV to make the diagnosis of whether they're actually HIV infected or not. And then once we make that diagnosis of HIV infection in children, we have the ability to begin them on HIV treatment to prevent the progression of disease and during infection. For kids who do not get treatment, so kids who are exposed to HIV and babies who are exposed to HIV and who do not get treatment, 50% of those children will die before their second birthday. So it's really important for us to, one, identify those children who are exposed to HIV, two, test them to make sure they're not HIV infected, and then three, if they are HIV infected, make sure that they have access to HIV care and treatment services, and then enable them to be maintained on those treatment services.
Now, when we look at treatment for children born with HIV/AIDS, of course, we don't really want to go to the specifics in terms of what they take. But how much treatment, is it something that they will have to live for the rest of their life, taking treatment, or is there some point where they can get better and perhaps stop the treatment at some point if the virus is undetectable? Can you enlighten us?
Okay, that's a very important question to respond to. And the answer to that is once you start antiretroviral treatment, once you start HIV treatment, one should remain on treatment for life. And this is not just for babies and for children. It's actually anyone who's HIV infected should remain, once they start HIV treatment, should remain on that treatment for life. It's a lifelong treatment and lifelong therapy.
Okay. Now, as these children grow up to become teenagers, adolescents, and later adults, they are confronted with some challenges, even as kids. But we want to talk about teenagers today, adolescents. And
yeah.
There seems to be less focus on those who have been infected at birth. We hear a lot about preventing HIV infection among teens. But what about those that have been infected at birth and are becoming teenager? What is your observation? What is the situation there?
Yeah, that's a... another important statistic for us to understand, I think there are about 2.1 million adolescents who are HIV infected globally. And amongst those who are infected, a relatively small percentage of them are actually enrolled in HIV care and treatment services. One, that's to begin with. So many of these are young people who were infected at birth and have gone undetected in terms of their HIV infection for many years. So I think one of the key things that we would want to do is to make sure that any young person who's at risk for HIV infection, whether it's through transmission from mother to child as a child or someone at risk based on sexual behavior or other risk exposure as a young adult, we want to make sure that we test them to identify their HIV status and get them on treatment as quickly as possible. Specific to your point, you know, the majority of your question, the majority of, as you say, many of these adolescents that have been exposed as babies have gone undetected in terms of their HIV status, and it's really important for us to ensure that there are opportunities for testing and identification of HIV infection so we can enroll them in treatment.
Now, you said that they have gone undetected. Can you explain why is this so? Is it because they did not get tested or because the virus was not detectable when they were babies?
Yeah, it's more likely that it's the first explanation that you gave, which is that they weren't identified as HIV exposed as a baby, okay, and then therefore were never tested for HIV infection. Often what happens, what happens with babies who are exposed is, you know, mom delivers a baby, she's on treatment or not, and they are lost from the healthcare system. And until that child presents with some indication of HIV infection, illness, pneumonia, et cetera, that could identify them as HIV, risk at HIV, they go unnoticed by the healthcare system. So one of the key things in programming for children is making sure that mothers who have HIV and have exposed children, that we retain them in the healthcare system so that there can be follow-up of the baby to ensure that the baby is not HIV infected.
Mm-hmm. Now, when we look at the life of teenagers, where young people are inclined to going out, meeting friends, you know, starting relationships, and other realities of growing up, what do you see as some of the main challenges for these youth that were infected as children and are aware of their status?
Yeah, I think the some of the key challenges with any adolescent, so it's not just HIV-infected adolescents, but adolescents in general, they're beginning to explore their sexuality, they're beginning to explore their life and et cetera. And one of the things we do want to make sure with these children is to give them the skills to negotiate life effectively, give them the skills to ensure that they can live healthy, healthy lives, the knowledge, the attitudes, the beliefs, the skill set to engage in healthy relationships, to engage in healthy behaviors, to be able to negotiate and disclose their HIV status if they know their HIV status, whether it's disclosing their status to friends and to schoolmates, but especially also to be able to negotiate safer sex practices if they are beginning to become sexually active, and to disclose their HIV status to sexual partners. We also want to give them the skill set to do behaviors that reduce risk to HIV or HIV transmission to their partners. For example, wearing condoms, not to engage in multiple sexual partners, et cetera. So it's giving young people the knowledge and the skill set and the attitudes that will enable them to make positive choices and engage in positive behaviors as they engage in sexual behaviors.
We have a question by Marshall, and he's sending us this question from Ghana. He says, "I believe sexual health education programs for teenager encourages sexual experimentation among youth." How do you respond to that, Dr. Lee? Because sexual health education is one of the ways that has been at least encouraged to really raise awareness among teenagers.
Yeah. My belief is that teenagers in general are going to explore sexual behaviors. As their sexual hormones kick in, they're going to become curious sexually. They're going to be exposed to other young people who are also beginning to explore their sexuality. I think the the key thing is, as they're exploring these behaviors, these natural behaviors that come with adolescence, is that we want to arm them with the ability to make good choices. We want to arm them with the capacity to make choices that do not put them at risk. At Elizabeth Glazer, we have support groups, psychosocial support groups in many of our country programs where we work with young people to ensure they have the support and they need the skill set that they need to, one, ensure that they have the capacity for disclosure of their status, that they have the skill set to engage in non-risky behaviors, and then that they have the support for any stigma that may go along with their HIV status.
And you mentioned stigma, very, very important topic there. Let's talk about that for a second.
Sure.
Today, whether it's among youth or adults, stigma is a reality when it comes to HIV/AIDS and also many other health issues. And, you know, it's indeed a problem. What do we do about stigma among youth? What are some approach or maybe evidence-based intervention that you could share with us that could curb this issue?
Yeah. You know, one of the I think key approaches that have been used in stigma reduction is support groups and psychosocial support groups and peer education and peer mentor groups. And by that we mean engaging young people who are HIV positive, who have had the courage to disclose their status and to be engaging in positive attitudes and positive approaches, and using them as key individuals to support other young people in as they traverse the HIV world. And so we use these peer mentors, teen mentors, peer educators as an opportunity to get other young people tested, to get other young people who then know their status to have the skill set and the comfort to disclose their HIV status to friends and to peers. I think one of the key ways for us to address stigma is people really do need to know their HIV status. I think the more people who know their HIV status and are engaged in treatment, I think the less there will be of stigma towards them.
What about when we look at the big picture in addressing this issue of HIV/AIDS, stigma, and other aspects of HIV, the role of government, especially in the African setting, we see that government plays an important role in terms of determining whether it's the population's life. It's not just in Africa, but just tell us a little bit about how government can really be part of the solution or how they are part of the solution.
Yeah. I think that a couple examples I could give. I was just reading something actually this week in Tanzania, the National AIDS Program in Tanzania has actually formed a task force, an adolescent task force, that will be focused on creating strategies and approaches for targeting adolescent youth. And the approach that they've taken is that they've engaged the young people and adolescents as part of that task force. And to me, that's a really good example of a very proactive and positive approach that a government can take. Okay. Is one, engaging adolescents in the thinking and process, but then they've also created a very specific task force that is targeted towards adolescents.
Okay.
And then the second thing would be around resources, just making sure they have sufficient resources to take care of the adolescent kids.
Okay, Dr. Lee, we have to leave it there. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us from Nairobi, Kenya.
Thank you.
And we'd like to thank our guest, Dr. Stephen Lee, Vice President of Program Implementation and Country Management with the Elizabeth Glazer Pediatric AIDS Foundation. For more on the show, log on to our website at voanews.com/health. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.